Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Responsible Day for the 9th of Adar. And today we're going to have the opportunity to learn from Rav Kook, and we're going to talk about seances. So Rav Kook is writing this on the 9th of Adar of Tafresh Ayin Bet of 1912, and this is from Da'at Kohen, which is about issues of Yoredeia issues. So witchcraft and things like that appears in Yoredeia, and it's responsible number 69. So the question is, he's asked about, and the early 1900s was a time when I think seances were very popular and respectable people were involved in them. So the way it's described in the tshuva is, al-dvar ha-tachbula, the strategy or the skill to speak with the spirit, spiritism, if this is a prohibition or not. So Rav Kook says, well, we have to figure out a couple of questions to begin with. So let's lay out the question, then we'll get a sense of what the halakhic issues are. First of all, is it biblically prohibited? If the prohibition is on the person who does it, or even the person who asks, meaning you could say there's a seance, right? So, or an attempt to contact the spirits. So one possibility is that it's prohibited on a Torah level, but then even then, once you say that, is it prohibited to the person who asks the question or the person who says they can contact these spirits? If it's only the person who says they can contact these spirits, then the other people might have a problem called lifteiver. They might have a problem with luring people into doing the wrong thing, right? So that could be an issue. But if it's on the person who asks the question as well, then that's the original prohibition. And then what if the spirit person is not Jewish? In other words, a Jew is going to the seance, but the person conducting the seance is not Jewish, so then the issues might be different, especially since it's not as clear to debate in halacha as to whether kishuf, or the various forms of witchcraft, are prohibited to and problematic for non-Jews. Now, depending on all this, he also says there's two ways that you can imagine it being prohibited. One is the question of what's called ov. There's a Torah prohibits being shoel be'ov v'yidoni, asking after, and we'll get to what an ov is, but it's a kind of a witchcraft. So that would be a Torah prohibition, including on the person who asked, because it's al ha-shoel, the person who asked, right? And then the person who's being asked is also has a problem, because the Torah says not to have a being shoel be'ov v'yidoni, and the person being asked also has a problem. And the second option would be that maybe it's not considered part of ov, but it's considered part of doresh el hametim. The Torah also prohibits being doresh el hametim, asking after the dead. And then it would seem like the prohibition is only on the one who is doresh el hametim, but the person who asks that person to be doresh el hametim would seem not to be included in that original prohibition, because the Torah talks about prohibiting being doresh el hametim. And then it might be only a rabbinic prohibition, a shvut, and the osek, and if the person is going to be doresh lamiti, the person is going to ask the dead or consult the dead, might only be, if that person is non-Jewish, then if non-Jews don't have a problem with kishuv, then it's not as much of an issue, and especially if we think that lifnei iver, and if it's a Jew, then it might be lifnei iver, right? If he's non-Jewish and there's no prohibition of kishuv, might not be an issue. And if he's Jewish and it's an issue, then it might be only for the person asking it, only a problem of what's called lifnei iver, of luring somebody else to sin. But once the question of lifnei iver, then there are other rules as well. So, for example, at a Torah level, we hold that lifnei iver only applies betray ibre denara. Betray ibre denara means that it's on two sides of a river, meaning that the person who's going to commit the sin is on the other side of a river and therefore could not get to this sin unless the Jew helps him. That's Torah level of lifnei iver. So Torah level lifnei iver is he can't get to the sin unless he helps him. But other than that, it's still not allowed, but it's only the Rabbanan, it's only a rabbinic level of prohibition. And then a nafkamina between those two, in general and here, would be if we're not sure of something, in cases of safek. So in cases of safek, in cases of doubt, we in a rabbinic thing can go lakula, can we go and follow the lenient view? In the case of d'oraita, we'd have to follow the chumra view, we'd have to follow the stringent view. So those are the questions we have. What's the definition? How does this work? And how does it go? So the questions that we have are, is consulting spirits a question of shoel yo'ov v'yidoni? Is the question of the racial team? Who's implicated in it? At what level? And what does that mean for the person asking the question? Is it rabbinic? Is it biblical? Is it lifnei iver? Is it not? And how does the question of it being a Jew or a non-Jew affect the situation? Rav Kook is going to deal with all of those questions. He points out that the question of what's considered a ba'al ov, right? The Torah speaks of a ba'al ov. The question of what's considered a ba'al ov is dealt with in a Mishnah and a Braita in Sanhedrin. So the Mishnah says the ba'al ov is a pitum Medaber Mishakir, or somebody who managed to speak out of their armpit in some way. It's unclear exactly how that works, but he out of his armpit, and in a bright it says, not only out of the armpit, but other parts of his arm, maybe out of the elbows and things like that, meaning you managed to get voices come out of different joints of your body part. Another discussion there in Sanhedrin says a Baal Ov, Echad ha-ma'ale bischurov, Echad ha-nish'al ba'gul gole. There are various ways of doing it, but it seems to lay them all out. So ma'ale bischurov would seem to mean he gets a voice to come out of other body parts, private body parts of his, or nish'al ba'gul gole is that he has a skull, and he asks the skull for information, and the skull in some way answers him. The way Rav Kook understands that, and I'm not saying it's the only way I understand, we're going to see the Rambam understands it differently, but the way Rav Kook understands it is, if that would mean that that if we know that the person that we're consulting, this, you know, seance person, this spiritualist that we're consulting doesn't do any of those things, he doesn't speak out of his armpit, he doesn't speak out of his elbows, he doesn't speak out of his various joints or body parts, and we know that that's true, or he doesn't ask questions of a skull, right, doesn't do any of those things, then we've left the prohibition of, oh, if it's not, it doesn't qualify as the prohibition of asking an oaf, and you know, asking, you know, a witch in that way, and then we don't have to worry about that. So that's one view of it. That would be the simple reading of Sanhedrin, he says. So then, once we've shown that it's not an ov, according to this way of reading it, you'd have to only worry about the Dereshal Emetim. So the word there, when it's describing what considered a Dereshal Emetim, what is it that's an asking after the dead, has a brayta that says, Dereshal Emetim is Hamar Ivasmo, somebody who starves himself, and then he goes and or fasts, and he gets himself very, very hungry, and he goes, he sleeps in a cemetery, Kedesha Tishre Alav Ruach Tumah. That was apparently assumed or understood to be a way to invoke the spirits of the dead who would come upon you, and you get information. So again, the simple reading of the Gemara says, Rav Kook, is that it seems to have assumed that Dereshal Emetim would be any way that one asks or consults with the dead. And then they said, and that would mean that an ov could be that way as well, meaning sitting around a table where a man or a woman, you know, has everybody hold hands and chant and asks the dead come to speak to them. That might have, if I just read the Torah, I might have thought that's Dereshal Emetim. But from the Braita, right, seems to say, no, it's not any Dereshal Emetim. It's this one particular version of being Dereshal Emetim, of the making oneself hungry and going to sleep in a cemetery and doing it that way. That's what it seems to see from the Gemara. So that would mean that any other versions of asking the dead for information would not qualify as part of this Isser. And so that's the way he's reading the Gemara, the simple reading the Gemara. More than just being the simple way of reading the Gemara, he says he thinks that's the way the Re'eim, Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi, who's I think best known, I could be wrong, but best known for his super commentary on Rashi, but he's also an important posik. And in the Haggahot Maimoniot, the Haggahot Maimoniot is a commentary, it's not a real commentary, it's sort of a note on the Rambam, who brings Ashkenazic customs that, about issues that the Rambam mentions. So it's not nearly as extensive as the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch, but it's sort of like that. It's an adding of the Ashkenazic point of view. And he quotes this idea from the Re'eim, that the definition of Shoel Ov is limited to those kinds of asking of the dead, asking of spirits from, by getting voices to come out of one's body parts, however that worked. And then the Dereshal Emetim is this particular form of going to a cemetery and looking for the dead to help you out. So how do we know that? The Gemara writes, Shemashbia l'chole l'shuv elav l'achar mita. Let's suppose somebody is ill, deathly ill, and a friend goes in and says, I want you to swear to me that you'll come back and tell me whatever it is, whatever I'm looking for. So I don't know if this is the right place, but I can't resist. I thought of it when I was preparing it, and I can't resist. There's this old joke about two friends have that issue, and they're both big baseball fans. What they really, really want to know whether there's baseball in heaven. And this is too old a joke, and you all know it already. I apologize. But they really want to know if there's baseball in heaven. So, you know, Frank says to Joe, they agree to each other, whoever one of us goes first, the other one's going to come back and is going to tell them whether there's baseball in heaven. So Frank passes away, you know, on a Monday, and Joe's walking around, and like Wednesday afternoon, he passes by a police officer, a mounted police officer sitting at the corner and on a curb, and the horse says to him, psst, hey, I forget who went first, Frank, let's say Frank went first. So the horse goes, psst, hey, Joe, and Joe looks around, it's the horse talking to me, he says, who is that? And he says, it's me, Frank. So Joe says, Frank, that's amazing. You came back. Thank you so much. So tell me, is there baseball in heaven? And the horse says, I got good news and bad news. So he says, what's the good news? The good news is baseball in heaven. He says, what's the bad news? You're pitching Friday. So that element of making somebody swear to come back after death and provide information, that's not considered Doresh Alemetim, says the Hagot Maimonim in the name of the Re'im. It's not a violation of that Torah prohibition because, here's the reason that's given, because Kevan She'eino Doresh Legufo Shelmet Ela LaRuach. He's not really speaking to a dead body. He's trying to get the spirit to come back, and the spirit is not considered a mate, not considered someone who is dead. And that seems to be the an easy understanding of the Gemara in Shabbat, of the Gemara on Kuf Nun Bet Amud Bet, 152b, where a certain min says to Rabbi Avohu, they have all conversation, and Rabbi Avohu answers, that was within a year. So within a year, the problem is, it seems like, that then you have the soul, but even though it's only just the soul, meaning it's the same thing of asking a dead person, but you don't ask the dead person with the body there, right? If I say to a person who's, when I say to a person, God, if somebody says to somebody else who's deathly ill, says, please come back and tell me what the world to come has looked like, whether, you know, whether my father's there, whatever it is. So if it should happen, and this all is sort of assuming that it really could happen, and the Rambam has a different perspective of this whole thing, but let's assume for a second that it could happen. So let's assume for a second that in some meaningful way, the dead person comes back to give me the information. I'm not having any contact with the dead person's body. I'm only having contact with a spirit of the dead person. So spirits of the Re'im aren't a problem. So the Gemara has a case where it seems to be a problem, but in that case that it seems to be a problem, the Gemara says that's the matter of the soul, that problem was a problem was because the soul was still connected to the body. Because for a year, the soul is still connected to the body. But other than that, it seems like, then it would be not a violation of this prohibition because the soul is now disconnected from the body. What's the soul disconnected from the body? You're not being Doresh Alemetim. You're not consulting with the dead body of, you know, consulting with the dead body of the person who has passed away. You're only consulting with the spirit, and that's a whole different set of things. That's the way the Re'im seems to have read it. And then the only time that an Ov would also be a Doresh Alemetim, right, which was an issue he had raised before, would be if somebody is talking to a skull, right? The one of the options that the Gemara gave for an Ov was that you get a skull to talk to you in some way. If you're going to get a skull to talk to you in some way, so that would be both a Shoel Ov as well as a Doresh Alemetim, because the dead body, the skull is a dead body. Now, all of that is one perspective, right? All of that is one view of it. But then Rav Kook goes on to say, and now, the Rambam, I think elsewhere, the Rav Kook doesn't bring it up here specifically, the Rambam isn't clear at all that he thinks of these things as true. He pretty much seems to think of these things as untrue, as not real, as all being fakery. But there were many, many traditional perspectives that held that these things were actually real and plausible, and that you could bring back the dead, you could get communication with the dead, you could ask the dead for communication, but that if you did, it was prohibited from the Torah. So until now, we've been following that perspective, right? That all of these spirits and issues can happen in real happening, and then the question is, what's prohibited, what's not prohibited, right? Because you could have theoretically said, the Torah means that absolutely any communication with the other world is not allowed. So Rav Kook has been following the perspective that reads the Gemaras and sees in those Gemaras the fact that there are specific definitions, and what doesn't fit that definition is not prohibited at a Torah level. All of this, however, doesn't fit the Rambam's perspective, is what Rav Kook now says to us. Not the Rambam, because the Rambam writes, Ezehu Doresh Alemetim, what qualifies as consulting with the dead? So he gives the Gemara's example, Sheheb Arivatzmo, he starves himself and he goes to the cemetery, and the point of making himself very, very hungry is that the dead person should come to him in a dream and tell him the answer to whatever he wants. So that's Doresh Alemetim, that's easy, right? Until now, the Rambam has not said nothing surprising, because the Gemara specifically gave that as the definition of Doresh Alemetim, of consulting with the dead. But the Rambam then goes on and says, and there are other ways of consulting with the dead as well. So you wear certain clothing, and he gives other examples. Those examples aren't so vital for us, because his conclusion is what's even more vital for us. What's the conclusion? Misayim, he concludes, Klalo Shel Davar, the summary of the matter is, Kol Ha'osek, Kedei She'yavo Ha'meit V'yodi'o, Loket. Anything that somebody does to try to encourage or try to invoke or bring the dead coming to him and giving him information, that's prohibited. Prohibited at a Torah level, that one would, if one did it in front of witnesses, the court would administer lashes for that any of these versions of being Doresh Lamitim to the Rambam. So the Rambam is saying that the Torah's words, Doresh Lamitim, and the Gemara's examples are just examples. Right? That's what the Torah says. Those are Torah's examples. But that the biblical prohibition can be other things as well, as long as it is seeking information from a dead person. So then that would apply to our seance as well, and the Ram would hold that these are Torah prohibitions and could get Malkot if they were done in the Malkot kind of way, but they're certainly violations of what the Torah said. Now the Rukh goes back to the Re'aim, who had taken the Gemara very literally, right, who had taken the Gemara not just literally, but also as specific, as giving you the definitions, not examples of the definition, but giving you the definition of these prohibitions, but he says, according to the Re'aim, who said that if you're not looking for the goof, if you don't consult with the body, it doesn't qualify as biblical Doresh Lamitim. He says you could still wonder whether it's not part of being Shoel Ov, because everything that he wrote about Shoel Ov, he says, that's only the opinion of Rashi. But if you look at Tosos and the Gemara, so far we've had the Rambam and the Gemara, now look at Tosos and the Gemara too. So they say that Ma'le B'Zichruto is Shem Shel Machshefut. Hare'in Anu Yodim Eich L'Hagdir V'Shem. It says, we don't know what Maleh B'Zichruto means. Maleh B'Zichruto, Rashi gives one definition, but Tosus says, we don't know what the definition is. So according to Tosus, you could say that all these situations, we're not sure what it is, and therefore you'd have to worry that it qualifies as Shoel Ov. And the Smag holds like the Rabbah, that we shouldn't define the Doresh Lamitim narrowly, that it's only that situation. And we know that because the Smag includes the Doresh Lamitim in the prohibitions of Ov as well. Or Baal of Ov, he says, is included in Shoel Lamitim as well, the Doresh Lamitim as well. So you see that he holds like the Rambam in that situation. And in Yoredeya, the Shulchan Aruch says that the Dafkal Hashbiya Bachayim Shavor Harmita is allowed. It's only when you're speaking to somebody who's alive and you make him swear or her swear, they'll come back after death. That's where the Gemara meant that it was okay. But that wasn't because you're not talking to the body. It was for another reason. What was the other reason? It's because the person wasn't dead yet. But when it comes to anybody who's already dead, any kind of seeking for information, that would be the problem. And the Ramah there says that if you're not mashbia ki'imit haruach, if somebody is only mashbia ruach, there are those who say it's okay. In other words, says Rav Kook, we have what's called a sveika le'isura. Sveika is ordinarily brought up in the context of heter, of things that are permissible, and if we have two doubts about whether something should be prohibited, then we say, nope, you're allowed to say that it's permissible. In other words, you know, this might be prohibited for this reason, but, you know, I'm sorry, we think this is prohibited, but the answer is, well, it might not be for this reason, and it might not be for that reason. If you have two reasons that it's not prohibited, then you're okay. Then you should be okay, because that's called a sveika, and if we have the right to assume that maybe it's not prohibited. But you can have it the other way around as well. You can have what's called a sveika le'isura, and that's what you have here, says Rav Kook, because maybe we should pass it like the Rambam, and if we should pass it like the Rambam, that means that all versions of seeking information from the dead are prohibited and part of the prohibition, the biblical prohibition of the Doresh Lamitim. And if you say, no, we follow the Re'aim, nonetheless, it could be that this, like what Tosa says, it could be this is called Hama'aleh Bizchuro, whatever, then he mentions it by his memory or something like that. This would be all part of that thing that the Tosa leaves open. And since we don't know how it qualifies, we'd have to worry about it and say we shouldn't do it. So that would all be reasons why to say it's prohibited. So let me just make clear that part of what drew me to speaking about this is that we can think of things like this today as not being such a big deal. You know, if you walk by, let's say, a spiritualist of some sort on the streets today, you can have hand readers, you can have things like this, and it's a reminder that some of these things that we don't even necessarily stop to think about can qualify as biblical prohibitions, and certainly seances are one such thing. So when it comes to a seance, you have to figure out the specific definition of the prohibition. That's what we've been doing till now, and we realize it might be more technical and therefore not include these things, but it might not be, and that's why we're ending up saying that no, you don't have the right to assume that it's okay, because you have all these reasons to think it might not be okay. More than that, he says, and this is the kind of thing that I certainly wouldn't have known, but more than that, he says, there's also a problem because we have there's a Kabbalistic tradition, and he's not saying you have to believe in it, but it just adds to the information you have to take into account. There's a Kabbalistic tradition that there's a part of the soul that's called Shitufa Degufa, the partner of the body. So the problem is that part of the soul actually rests in the bones. So however that works, it's theoretically saying something like, we have this odd thing called the soul. So we have this odd thing called the soul. We have to figure out what it is. So Kabbalistically, you talk about what it is, and what you say is, well, I don't know, maybe the soul is both not really of the body. It's sort of within the body somehow. It's sort of somehow contained within the body, but it's not really part of the body. But it might be that while that's true, there's also a part of the soul that's actually within the body. Now, the reason why that's important is because even according to the Re'eim, if you're trying to get the body to respond to you, then you have a problem, right? Because that's the violation of the prohibition. So if you have a part of the soul that's connected to the body, then it might be that if you try to raise that part of the soul, right, and get that part of the soul to give you information, if that's the part of the soul that comes on these seances, then it really is technical, even in this view, meaning the restrictive view was that it's only if you try to raise the body in some way. So, right, you go to the cemetery where the bodies are, and you try to get the information however it is from the body. But if, according to Kabbalah, in the Kabbalistic understanding of this, the part of the soul that one raises in these kinds of seances is that part of the soul that comes out of the body, that is part of the body, then even if you think you're just if you're just talking to the body and you're just you think you're just consulting with the soul and trying to understand something from the soul, even if that were true that that's what's going on, it might be part of the soul that qualifies as the body in terms of this prohibition of being Doresh El HaMeitim, and that would be another reason to think that that would be a problem. So all of that is the technical definitions of these issues and where Rav Kook gets his ideas about whether these things are prohibited or not prohibited, allowed or not allowed. Right, so that's all. So he thinks it's probably usher for all these sorts of reasons. Right, he thinks that the Rambam certainly thinks it's usher. Even if you think that you're going to follow the Ashkenazic practice that the Re'eim Reliyahu Mizrahi had said that the Ashkenazic practice is that we limit these prohibitions to specific versions of Shoel Ov, specific versions of consulting witchcraft in whatever way, and specific versions of the Rachel HaMeitim of asking the dead for information, and those specific versions might leave this out. Not so simple, because it might not leave it out. It might not leave it out because in Tosos we realized that the definition of Shoel Ov is not as clear as we thought it was. If it's not as clear as we thought it was, then it might be that we're doing that. And even if you think that we're clear that it's not that, it might also count as Doresh El HaMeitim because of the Kabbalistic tradition that this might be the part of the soul that's connected to the body. So all of that is technical halakhic issues in seances and things like that. Now, he didn't get into the Lifnei Iver issues. He just sort of referred to them because the answer would be that if it's not specifically prohibited for the person asking, and it would turn out that the person being asked, the spiritualist, was a non-Jew, then you'd have to talk about whether or not Kishuf, witchcraft, is prohibited to a non-Jew, and there are different opinions on that. That would be another debate you would get into. And then you get into issues of Lifnei Iver, of whether or not it's considered luring them to sin by asking them this question. After having said all of that, in terms of the technicalities of halacha and going through the sugyot, he says, "Ulaniyat da'ati in kedai l'chazik et ha'abuna al yidei tachbulot," right, which are close to a michshol iser. That you're going to use all of these ways of trying to get information, and part of what happens for people is some people think, and this shows that there's a spiritual realm, right? This shows that there's a whole other thing. It's not a purely physical world, and that makes me believe in Hashem, and that makes me a better Jew. There are people who very much that's what works for them. Rav Kook is saying, without having ever once doubted whether or not it might be true and these things might work, he said that's not the way to develop proper faith, especially since it comes so close to taking such risks of maybe violating the Torah to get, you know, a little bit of better certainty or better feeling about your Judaism. That's a problem. Better to fulfill the Torah's pasuk, which is said right in the context of witchcraft, tamim tiyeh im Hashem Elokecha. We're supposed to be aiming and striving to develop a sense of of wholesomeness and wholeness with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what we're supposed to be doing. And therefore, and Hashem will give us, you know, long life and things like that, and we shouldn't have to feel like we need information. Right? That's a key passage of Tamim Tirei Zot Lekach, that we're supposed to trust in the future. We're supposed to trust Hashem about the future. And the whole idea of seances, the whole idea of these kinds of things is that we need to know that we have control over certain things and not control over other things. So what people often do is they look for more control and consulting the dead and getting information that otherwise wouldn't be able to get, we feel like it's giving us more control. And so what part of Rav Kook is saying is better fulfill the verse of Tamim Tirei Zot Lekach, trusting in Hashem and knowing that we can't deal with the future, we can't define the future for ourselves as much as we'd like to, and therefore what we need to do is trust in Hashem, do what we can, not risk getting into problems, and then trust in Hashem. Then in sort of a postscript he says, and if even if the person who's going to be doing the securing information is a non-Jew, and therefore he might have thought it was okay, but it's not allowed minat Torah, because even though we don't think that rule, according to the opinion that said that they are prohibited in Kishuv, they are prohibited against witchcraft, and then there's a discussion there about which parts of those apply to Jews and apply to non-Jews. Some hold that it applies to non-Jews, but we don't hold that way. Nonetheless, that's only true of Kishufim, of forms of witchcraft that have no Avodah Zarah implied in them, right? They have no idolatry implicated in them. But in a lot of these situations, what you think you're doing is like a mikater l'shed. Somebody's offering incense to a demon. So there's an element of idolatry there, of avodah zarah, of worshiping other powers. So you have to talk about that whole issue of which things are which, right? So and what qualifies which. That you certainly can't do, because that's avodah zarah. That's not just a question of witchcraft. They come very close to each other in a lot of situations, and you'd have to go into the whole things. But he doesn't get into the whole thing here, because you should be doubtful about it in terms of Ov. Also, he said we don't know which kind of Ov is and which kind of things are Ov and not Ov, and therefore we as Jews should just trust in Hashem. So that's what Rav Kook has to say about seances for the 9th of Adar. Now, very briefly, he has another tshuva in Dat Kohen. This is from Siman 136 Kuflamid Vav from the 9th of Adar of Tav Resh Pei Tet of 19 Pei Tet. Is 1929, where he's writing to, you know, a friend of his about who's a rav somewhere, and he's asking the question about what do you do about the tzedakah boxes that people are handing around for the Keren Kayemet Yisrael, which eventually became the Jewish National Fund. Meaning, in 1929, you got people collecting money for the Jewish National Fund. Now that's planting trees in Israel and doing all the things that the JNF does, the Jewish National Fund does, right? The Keren Kayemet does, but there was already a system of collecting money for the Jews of Eretz Yisrael, and that was the charity called the Charity of Rabbi Meir Baal Hanes. So a quick answer is that what we do is, there are tzedakah boxes in many shuls that are fixed, attached to the walls, with nails. So those are for Rabbi Meir Baal Hanes, and then you have other tzedakah boxes that are just going around, sort of loose and free, in people's homes and stuff, and that would be for Keren Kayemet Yisrael, and that would be the money for the JNF. And he says in that way you can try to keep the two sides, both of whom are dear to him, he says, you keep them both happy. The side that wants to keep the Yeshuva Yashan, where the Jews lived in Israel before all this Zionism stuff started, right? There have been Jews in Israel for hundreds, for centuries. I think it's probably true that at least, certainly from late in the it's hard to describe exactly, but certainly I think all the way throughout history, there's been some number of Jews living in Eretz Israel. I'm not sure there's a time when Israel was really fully lost from all Jews. I think there wasn't, but I could be wrong about that. It could be like soon after, it could be sometime after the Yerushalmi was done, let's say in the 300s or 400s, and until later in the 700s, 800s, 900s, it could be there was a time in there, but I think not. I think there's a continuous settlement there, and the charity of Meir Baal Hanes was the way that people gave charity to the people who lived there. That's called the Yeshuva Yeshan. Now, they weren't Zionists. Many of them were what we would call today Haredim. They were in the more right-wing sections of Judaism, however you define those things. But they're the ones who had set up whatever infrastructure was already there when other Jews started coming in the late 1800s or the 1900s. They were the ones who had already been there for at least centuries. So Rav Kook says, and there, you know, the foundation of the Jewish community, certainly of the observant Jewish community in Israel today, and then, so keeping them alive is keeping alive traditional, this is what Rav Kook says, traditional Judaism that's faithful to the Torah. and keeps many important people alive, Torah scholars, orphans, widows, right? And then the people who are coming new and they're helping redeem the land, so that's the JNF people, and you want money to go to them as well, and that's helping expand this Yeshuva Mechudash, the new places, like he says, that he calls a Petach Tikva. We know of a place called Petach Tikva, but that's what it meant, an opening of hope for the future, and it's Micha Yeshua and the sprouting of the redemption. And so he said, so all of the old takanot, the old ordinances that you have to give only to Rav Meir Balanes, so that you're fulfilling it because you have tzedakah boxes for Rav Meir Balanes, you're just having other things come in as well. So it's a very brief tshuva, and that's what he says, that's the basic idea. I was struck by it because it reminds us of the balancing act that Rav Kook felt the need to do and was committed to doing. I don't mean felt the need to do like politically, I mean committed to doing, that he saw himself needing to balance the needs of an old yeshuv, which in some ways I think was sort of stuck and wasn't able to see the future that was coming, but in other ways was in a very important contributor to Jewish life. They were the ones who had been there. That's an important point. They were the ones who were continuing to be there. Many of them were the Orthodox ones, meaning in the early, in 1929, among the new settlers, the numbers of observant people was relatively small, so that they were also the backbone in a lot of ways of Torah Judaism in Eretz Yisrael, and you want to keep supporting them. So those are the charities, the monies that go to the charity of Meir Balanes. You want to add to that now a whole new charity. How are you going to do that? So he says, so you have a different way of collecting that money. That money is in the free tzedakah boxes. He does get into the question of if there's enough money to go around for both, right? What if people say to you, well, I'm only going to give to one of those boxes? So that's going to be a whole set of other questions. But he doesn't get into those questions. He says, here's a way to try to keep both sides happy. And that's a thing to think about when we have problems in communities. We have communal issues. One solution is try to, as much as we can, to meet both sides' needs and therefore not to have to choose among them. And that's what Rav Kook chose here in his response for the 9th of Adar. We started with the seances issue, and now with the 9th of Adar in terms of giving charity to the Jews of Eretz Yisrael. Responsible day for the 9th of Adar. Have a great day.